John chapter 18, starting at verse 28. The Jewish religious authorities led Jesus from the high priest Caiaphas to the Roman governor Pilate's palace. It was early in the morning, so that they could eat the Passover. The Jewish religious leaders wouldn't enter the palace. Entering the palace would have made them ritually impure. So Pilate went out to them and asked, "What charge do you bring against this man?" They answered, "If he had done nothing wrong, we wouldn't have handed him over to you." Pilate responded, "Take him yourselves and judge him according to your law." The religious leaders replied, "The law doesn't allow us to kill anyone." And this was so that Jesus' word might be fulfilled when he indicated how he was going to die. Pilate went back into the palace. He summoned Jesus and asked, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this on your own, or have others spoken to you about me?" Pilate responded, "I'm not a Jew, am I? Your nation and its chief priests handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus replied, "My kingdom doesn't originate from this world. If it did, my guards would fight so that I wouldn't have been arrested by the religious leaders. My kingdom isn't from here." "So you are a king," Pilate said. Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. I was born and came into the world for this reason, to testify to the truth. Whoever accepts the truth listens to my voice." "What is truth?" Pilate asked. After Pilate said this, he returned to the Jewish religious leaders and said, "I find no grounds for any charge against him. You have a custom that I release one prisoner for you at Passover. Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?" They shouted, "Not this man. Give us Barabbas." Barabbas was an outlaw. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. What is truth? When I ask that question of my 10 and 11-year-old, I'm usually asking a question about what just happened. Who hit whom? Who said what? Please tell me the truth and don't make up a story. And I can hear my grandmother coming out just then. Now, the deeper question is, what does it mean for my wife and I to teach our children what is true? When the false posts on social media outnumber the more accurate ones, how do we model the careful and deliberate telling of truth? That's part of the question. But I'm not simply thinking about the accurate reporting of facts. I'm thinking about what it means for any of us to teach our children about something that is real and true in the deepest sense. What is true? What is the most real and true thing you can say? And this isn't just a question for parents. It's a question for the entire faith community. How do we teach the youngest among us about what is true and real? The late country singer, music legend Johnny Cash wrestled with the question of truth and what to tell the next generation in his song titled, "What is Truth?" It was recorded in 1970 on the Man in Black album. It was a protest song, and it rose to number 3 on the country charts. A little boy of 3 sitting on the floor looks up and says, "Daddy, what is war?" "Son, that's when people fight and die." The little boy of 3 says, "Daddy, why?" A young man of 17 in Sunday school being taught the golden rule, and by the time another year has gone around, it may be his turn to lay his life down. Can you blame the voice of youth for asking, "What is truth?" A young man sitting on the witness stand, the man with a book says, "Raise your hand. Repeat after me, I solemnly swear." The man looked down at his long hair, and although the young man solemnly swore, nobody seems to hear anymore. And it didn't really matter if the truth was there. It was the cut of his clothes and the length of his hair. And the lonely voice of youth cries, what is truth? That last stanza reminds me a bit of the trial scene with Jesus and Pilate. Pilate asked Jesus, what is truth? But then Pilate turns away and doesn't even wait for an answer. And the careful reader of the Gospel of John picks up on the irony right away. In John chapter 4, Jesus has told the disciples, I am the way and the truth and the life. And Pilate asks the question, what is truth? And the truth, the way, the truth, and the life is standing right in front of him. Now, in the entirety of John 14, verse 6, Jesus says, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And what does Jesus mean by this? For some Christians, it means that only those who are self-proclaimed Christians will be saved and go to heaven, or even more narrower than that, only very particular kind of Christians, like the kind I am, will be saved and go to heaven. But I hear those words, and I notice that Jesus didn't say that the church was the way, the truth, and life, or a particular religious group was the way, the truth, and life, or even that Christianity was the way, the truth, and life, but that Jesus said that he was. And to me, it sounds like Jesus is telling us that he's the one who's in charge of the guest list in the kingdom of heaven, thank you very much, and not us. And the other thing I realize is that the Gospel of John was written to Christians who were in the minority, who were being persecuted. And so for them to hear the voice of Jesus in the Gospel, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. For them, these are words of assurance that you've chosen the right path, that you're listening to the right voice. Ultimately, these are words of grace. And the late theologian Shirley Guthrie once asked, who is this Jesus who is the way and the truth? This Jesus is the one who seemed to accept everyone, particularly those regarded as unacceptable by religion. He is the one who reached out across all the barriers of culture and race and religion and invited all to sit down together at the banquet table. And I'm reminded of what Jesus says in John 12:32, and I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. And to me, what it means to embrace Jesus as a truth is to embrace the self-giving love that Jesus embodied. This is a self-giving love that loves God with everything we have and also loves our neighbors as ourselves. Now, perhaps we've simply replaced that abstract word truth with that abstract word love. And so what does it mean? And a friend of mine reminded me of a quote from Mary Oliver's poem, In Blackwater Woods. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal. To hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it. And when the time comes to let go, to let it go. For me, this is a deep expression of what's true. This is a life, death, and resurrection pattern that Jesus embodied. To love what is mortal with everything in us. To embrace the gift of our lives and the gifts of other people's lives and indeed the life of the whole world and not take those lives for granted. Yet even as much as we love and cherish the gift of our lives, we try to be prepared to let them go when the time comes. And certainly we know that we cannot hold on to our own lives with such a grip that it hurts others. And we also know that we can give our lives to causes greater than ourselves, while also putting our trust in the one who said, I am the truth, and who also said, I am the resurrection and the life. And I'm thinking some more about the young man of 17 in Johnny Cash's song. It's one thing to lay down one life in a war that has been fueled by imperialistic goals and sustained through propaganda. It's quite another, as the Gospel of John points out, to lay down one's life for a friend. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. John 15, verse 13. When it comes to teaching truth to our children, how do we teach them that self-giving love is the highest form of love? How do we teach them that it's important to do the right thing simply because it is right, even if doing the right thing leads not to rewards and accolades, but to ridicule? How do we teach them that the right thing is to stand up for someone who is being bullied, even if it means that we get called names ourselves? How do we teach them that the right thing to do is to reach out to the friendless and lonely, even at the risk of being ostracized ourselves by those at the top of the social pyramid? There's a scene from the Batman movie, The Dark Knight, that might be construed as a parable about what it means to embrace self-giving love, even at the risk of your own life. Now, towards the end of the movie, the Joker, hauntingly played by the late Heath Ledger, shuts off the power to two ferry boats filled with people who are fleeing the city, effectively trapping them out on the open water. On one of the ferries, a group of Gotham City's most upstanding and affluent citizens. On the other, a group of prison inmates. The Joker hijacks the intercom and announces that both ships have been rigged with explosives. "Enough to blow you all sky high," he says. "Tonight, you're all going to be part of a social experiment." The Joker reveals that each group has been given the detonator to the other group's ferry. Anyone attempts to get off your boat, you all die. Each of you has a remote to blow up the other boat. But at midnight, I blow all of you up. If, however, one of you presses the button, I'll let that boat live. So who's it going to be? Gotham City's most wanted scumbags or the sweet and innocent civilians? You choose. "Oh, and you might want to decide quickly," he says, "because the people on the other boat might not be quite so noble." Now, it isn't too long before the upstanding civilians on the first boat start feeling a little twitchy. Several of them say that they shouldn't have to die. After all, those convicts on the other boat had their chance. They chose to steal and murder. And just before total panic and chaos takes over, one person says, "Let's put it to a vote." So the upstanding civilians are asked to write down their vote on a piece of paper and place them in a hat to be tallied up. And after several minutes, the final tally is 140 against and 396 in favor of blowing up the other boat. As the captain stands holding the detonator, a passenger says, "So go ahead, do it." And the captain looks up at the clock on the wall. "We're still here. That means they haven't killed us either." Meanwhile, on the other ship, the ship with the convicts, a large and intimidating man approaches the captain. "You don't want to die," he says, eyeing the detonator, "but you don't know how to take a life. Give it to me. You can tell them I took it by force. Give it to me and I'll do what you should have done 10 minutes ago." Painfully, the captain hands the detonator to this man, and without a moment's hesitation, this man tosses it out of the window, and he then joins the other inmates on the other side of the ship who are praying together. Now back to the first boat, the boat with the upstanding citizens. A man has lost patience with the captain and taken the detonator himself so that he can finally blow up the other boat. He places his fingers on the detonator. As he looks down at the device and at his own hands, we see that look of contempt on his face start to crack and get replaced with a look of deep sadness. He slowly places the detonator back inside the box and joins the other civilians filled with shame. All the people on both ferries are still alive at the stroke of midnight. Furious, the Joker grabs his own detonator to blow up both of the ships, that is, until Batman shows up to save the day. Obviously, real life is not like a Batman movie. But real life does present us with countless opportunities to give our lives away, almost always little by little, very rarely all at once. And we give our lives out of love for others, modeling what Jesus taught us. And right before Pilate asks Jesus what is truth, Jesus says, "Whoever accepts the truth listens to my voice." And this is how we discern what is true. praying and listening together to the voice of Jesus as we ask Jesus, what does it mean here in this place, here at this moment, to give our lives away in service to each other and to all of the people that you have given us to love and serve? May we listen together, seeking the way, the truth, and the life. All glory and praise be to our God.